That is some of the most famous music that Tchaikovsky ever wrote. It's the final movement of his Fourth Symphony, and sometimes called the Fate Symphony. You haven't heard why yet in that music, but it does come back and it shows up in the beginning. And a performance here by the Vienna Philharmonic, conducted by Christoph von Dohnányi on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The show's your connection to local performances, and on today's program, in just a matter of moments, we'll be talking with the music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, who will play the Tchaikovsky Fourth in an all-Russian program on Friday night at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And then coming up at around 4:25 or so, a band called Honnely, who are a modern-day folk trio, as they call themselves, who are inspired by Peter, Paul, and Mary. A reference, of course, in the title of their band name to the classic song Puff the Magic Dragon. They're going to be performing in Charleston Sunday afternoon and also in Sandwich, Illinois, but north of here, on Saturday evening. So more about that and some of their music coming up later on in the program. But first, welcome back to Stephen Alltop. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to be here.
A Russian festival, the program is called, all Russian. A couple of, one particular staple that we heard a part of, the Fourth Symphony, one perhaps a little less of a staple of some from Rimsky-Korsakov, and then a couple of pieces for cello solo.
That's right. Well, this last program of our 2013-14 season is just unabashedly designed for enjoyment. This season has included a lot of, I would call, new listening experiences for our audience with music by Michael Dougherty and Russell Peck and Christopher Theophanidis and Walter Piston. And I love presenting these American works, but this last program is a nod towards some of the heart of the Russian orchestral repertoire. My own training has a fairly heavy Russian influence, since my main orchestral conducting mentor has been Viktor Yampolsky, who came straight out of the Moscow Philharmonic and that whole school of Russian conducting and composition. And I love sharing that with audiences. And in this case, it's the new audience for me, since this is still just the end of my first season here. And since we're just here in Eastertide, we are starting the program with the Rimsky-Korsakov Russian Easter Overture. And it begins with this Slavonic chant called Let God Arise. And it's very clearly heard at the beginning and works its way through. And he manages to set up a very grand statement of the chant by the end of the piece. And sort of like other works by Rimsky-Korsakov we know and hear more often, like the Scheherazade, there are several significant solos for instruments in the orchestra, including trombone and the concertmaster, and first flute and clarinet, bassoon. All of these instruments have significant solos in this overture.
And here you will, we're not going to get to all the solos, but we'll at least hear the beginning of this music. This tune recurs a lot in the piece, the Russian Easter Overture, performance here by the Montreal Symphony, led by Charles Dutoit.
Thank you.
The opening music and then some from the Russian Easter Overture by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, with Charles Dutoit conducting the Montreal Symphony Orchestra. Stephen Altop will conduct the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra in a concert Friday night that includes that music. In fact, that music will open the concert at 7:30 in the Follinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center. Is there any indication that this piece was played for an occasion?
That's a good question, and I can't remember the answer to that. But one thing I was going to say that I found interesting in just sitting here listening to it again is that at times you hear a very strong resemblance to Glinka, and at other times you hear a very strong resemblance to Mussorgsky. This piece references the sound of large church bells several times in exactly the same way that Mussorgsky does in his Pictures from an Exhibition. And, of course, it has this very driving, repetitive beam, bum-bum-bum feel like that you also hear in Ruslan and Ludmilla. So it's just about as Russian as it gets.
So there were definitely some musical themes recurring in the different composers' music,
well,
and some of them studied with each other.
And they were part of that same group together that was really trying to promote Russian music, it's true.
You're bringing a soloist, a pretty well-known cello soloist, for the middle two pieces on this four-piece program, Wendy Warner. Tell us about her.
Well, Wendy Warner is a product of Chicago who established her great artistry very early in her life. She is what we often refer to as a child prodigy, who is now an adult, an established artist, and a mom, and just a terrific person and artist. She does a lot of chamber music, too, in addition to solo playing. And I hear of her quite frequently in that regard as well. And Wendy has also spent a little bit of time, I think she did some guest teaching at the university for a little while. So this won't be her first time, I believe, to be in the Krannert Center. But she was excited to come play this music in the Krannert Center. She'll be starting with a very short and lyrical and introspective work for the solo cello by Alexander Glazunov called the Chanto Menestrel, or the Minstrel Song. And it is just this really brief, almost extended melodic phrase with orchestral accompaniment. And it's not very often performed, but I'm quite fond of it because some of the solo cello works, excuse me, like the Schumann Cello Concerto, or in this case, the Rococo Variations, which is the next piece that she'll play, aren't tremendously long. And this piece, being less than 5 minutes, is a great second work to help fill out the program and just an alternative sort of style to hear the soloist play in. So I'm excited that we're doing that. And as I mentioned, that will be followed by the variations on a Rococo theme. Rococo referring to this sort of early classical style. And Tchaikovsky was very attracted to that and also the music of Mozart. And he wrote some beautiful music based on those styles, really elegant, as this piece is. It was originally written for a cellist named William Fitzhagen, and it's in 7 variations. And in almost every variation, the theme is very clearly heard, but quite a wide range of tempi and moods that he manages to put forward in the piece.
Well, the Tchaikovsky is the better known of the two pieces, as you said. And so here's a little of the Glazunov, just to let people hear perhaps twice, so when they come to hear her at the concert, they'll have had a little bit of exposure to this tune, which I don't know at all. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it myself. This is the great Mstislav Rostropovich as soloist here in the Minstrel's Song by Glazunov.
Thank you.
Well, we gave you the whole thing after all. It is so short, and as Stephen said, it's just one continuous melody, the minstrel song by Alexander Glazunov, played by Dmitri Shostakovich. I'm sorry, played by Mstislav Rostropovich, here under the direction of Leonard Bernstein with the Israel Philharmonic, I think this recording, on Live and Local on FM 90.9. My guest is Stephen Altop, who is the music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, who will welcome cellist Wendy Warner to play that piece and Tchaikovsky's Rococo Variations for their concert on Friday night at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And the second half will consist of Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony. We heard some of the last movement at the beginning of the show, and I mentioned sometimes it's called the Fate Symphony, and there's a theme with which it opens. And I've honestly forgotten, Stephen, why fate?
Oh, I think that some of it has to do with circumstances. Tchaikovsky wrote this in 1878, and he dedicated it to this muse, Madame von Meck, who was supporting him and who he seemed to have a deep emotional attachment to, I think mostly in terms of emotional support. And Tchaikovsky was a very tormented soul. As I said to the orchestra last night, I'm sorry for him that he was so tormented, but he would have probably written much less interesting music had he been completely satisfied and happy. Because this symphony in particular is just so full of a range of emotions, in particular angst and heartfelt turmoil at times. And it opens with what's called this fate theme, which is this fanfare-like proclamation that you hear in the brass.
And here it is. And we'll actually have to say goodbye and let everybody hear the complete work at the concert.
Yes, I hope they do.
Stephen Altop with the CU Symphony. Concert is Friday night at 7:30. Here's the Vienna Philharmonic, led by Christoph von Dohnányi. And the piece continues, the opening of the Fourth Symphony of Tchaikovsky here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program is made possible with support from Sinfonietta Camera, presenting Three's a Charm on Saturday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in the Follinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center. With pianist and conductor Ian Hobson, Sinfonia will perform three Beethoven favorites.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome, I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. So many times I've let you down. So many times I've played around. I tell you now, they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I'll think of you. Every song I sing, I'll sing for you. When I come back, I'll wear your wedding ring. Smile for me, tell me that you'll wait for me, hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Then close your eyes, I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the times I won't have to say. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.
Leaving on a Jet Plane, the name of the song, and written by John Denver, made popular by Peter, Paul, and Mary, long time ago, and sung here by, well, Chris, Eli, and Sarah, who are a band called Hannah Lee. They're a group that is inspired by Peter, Paul, and Mary. They're going to be performing in our listening area Sunday afternoon, and not far from there on Saturday, not far from our listening area on Saturday, in Sandwich, Illinois, Saturday evening at Sandwich Opera House. Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Charleston, at Eastern Illinois University, part of Charleston's annual celebration, a festival of the arts, which actually starts on Friday. On the phone with me are two of the members of a band called Hannah Lee. Eli Zoller. I forgot
Zoller,
how you
say
it.
Yeah.
Is it Zoller?
It is.
All right. And Sarah Randall Hunt with Chris Ware, the absent one, but the other member of the group. Thanks both for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure being here.
I hope you don't mind a personal question right off the bat, because it has a lot to do with my response to the fact that you're channeling Peter, Paul, and Mary, so to speak. And that's, how old are you?
Uh-oh. I just turned 30 in September.
And I'll be turning 30 in June.
Okay. And Chris is something similar, I'm going to guess?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the reason for that question was Peter, Paul, and Mary got started in the 60s, which was when I was born. So I'm 53. And so I'm curious how a few almost 30s or 30s are guys, I was going to say kids, sorry, decided to pick up on Peter, Paul, and Mary of all people.
Well, I was pretty much forced into it at birth, because my dad just happens to be about your same age, and I grew up with this music in the house all the time, and I loved it. So when the opportunity came along to play this music for people professionally, that was an opportunity I certainly couldn't turn down. But I've been around this music my entire life. People joke, people tell us that they're at our shows, we were raised on this music, and I jokingly but honestly respond, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Sarah, do you have a similar story?
I have the exact same story. Many of the songs that we have wound up performing, I grew up listening to all of these groups, and very much influenced my musical tastes growing up, and had a deeper appreciation for it as I came into adulthood. So yeah, essentially, I think everybody's been raised on this music, kind of.
So Chris would give the same answer.
I'm not sure he would. He's always been familiar with it. But not to speak for him or anything, but I think his experience was much one of inspiration. Once he was grown up, a lot like how Sarah, and I developed an appreciation for it when we got older. I think that's when he was introduced to it. But his love for it's all the same.
So Eli, you said that when an opportunity came to do this, that you could hardly pass it up. What was the opportunity, or was it presented, or did you create it?
A little bit of both, wouldn't you say, Sarah?
Yeah, it was sort of a group effort, but we owe a lot of our start to Aaron Gandy, who sort of introduced all of us and was a good friend of Chris Ware's beforehand, and was very familiar with Chris's voice and his approach to music, and then introduced all of us, got us together, and helped organize making this happen. So.
Peter, Paul, and Mary, have always been favorites of mine. My mom had those records in our house. Mm-hmm. And I kind of rediscovered them for myself, even though I took a lot of those records with me when I left home. Just a few years ago, really, I think there was an... there's a CD set, I forget, 4 or 5 CDs out that contains virtually all of their recorded music, and I started to re-listen to them, and it took me, all the way back to some of the songs I particularly loved. And what have you done to preserve their sound, or have you tried to make it your own sound while doing their music?
Well, I think there's in order to really gain a true appreciation for this music as a performer, you sort of have to do both. You have to both acknowledge the way that it was originally, recorded, and the way that Peter, Paul, and Mary originally came at it as artists, but also as an individual, you have to include some part of yourself and your own environment and experience into this music, or else you're not really going to embody it as the storytelling music that it wants to be. So, Sarah, how do you start every single one of our concerts? You have a line that you say that always says it perfectly.
Oh, I don't know. What do I say?
What do you say? You introduce us, and then you say we celebrate, but we do not imitate.
Celebrate, but don't imitate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you can't help but bring your own personal experience to music as you're performing it, so it has to live in the now. But at the same time, you know, music today is very different than how these songs were written, which is very clean and simple is a deceptive word, but very straightforward, I guess. So we learned so much about the specificity of rehearsing these songs and really took a cue from how clean and straightforward the music is.
And well-prepared as well.
Yeah, well-rehearsed,
they were very well-prepared.
Mm-hmm. So it seems seamless and what seems very simple and straightforward is also a lot of work went into that sound. I have a great deal of respect for what they did and trying to pay homage to it in our performances. So,
you guys got started, I think, in 2009
as
a band. I didn't write this down, and so I forget exactly the year, but wasn't 2009 around the time that Mary Travers died?
It was.
Oh, yes. I'm trying to think. I think it was...
Pretty sure it was in the fall of 2009.
The same year.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. And so I kind of wondered if that fact had anything to do with your kicking off as a band.
The inspiration started beforehand. I was so struck by... I was familiar with her music, but... then watching videos and listening to interviews and watching tape of all of their performances and growing a deeper respect for Mary Travers, and then to lose her at that same time. So sad. Such an incredible talent, and not only talent, but a powerful individual. Very strong female role model for me as an artist, as she did so much for her community and her world, really, outside of just her astounding skills as a singer and a musician. And, you know, I also have lost several people to cancer, and really, you know, it was just so devastating. Such a wonderful talent, such an inspiration.
And they kept reuniting periodically over mm-hmm. the years.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And they really only ever took a break towards the late 60s, early 70s, when I think they assumed they may be going on in their separate ways, but then were eventually reunited, and then, even though it was never the same kind of consistent performing and traveling and recording that they had from their career from the early 60s on, they really did remain this sort of unit. Everybody's sort of familiar with who Peter, Paul, and Mary were, because they never really just stopped making music, and still to today, you know, you can find Peter Yarrow and Noel Paul Stokey making music either together or separately. And they've always sort of lived through their experiences with music. It's really all inspiring all around.
I'm talking with two members of a band called Honnelly. They call themselves a modern day folk trio inspired by the music and legacy of Peter, Paul, and Mary. And they're Sarah Randall Hunt and Eli Zoller. They're going to be performing in Charleston Sunday afternoon at 3:00 at the outside the Dowden Fine Arts Center on the Eastern Illinois University campus. They'll also be performing at the Sandwich Opera House in Sandwich, Illinois, which is a little outside our listening area, on Saturday for an evening show, 8:00. Let's listen to another of their tunes here, which were also Peter, Paul, and Mary's tunes. This is one that I always particularly liked. It's called "Don't Think Twice, It's All Right." And I don't remember who wrote this one. Is this one of theirs or someone else's?
This is Mr. Bob Dylan.
This is Bob Dylan's song. Okay. Well, you know, that's one of the interesting things about Peter, Paul, and Mary is that they made famous a number of songs that... whose composers are at least as famous as they are, if not more so, Bob Dylan being one of them and John Denver being another.
Certainly.
And anyway, let's give it a listen. Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, here on Live and Local. Thank you.
Ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. It don't matter anyhow. Ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. If you don't know by now, when the rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm moving on, but don't think twice, it's alright. Ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. That light I've never known. Ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. I'm on the bright side of the road. Still I wish there was something you could do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. We never did too much talking anyway, but don't think twice, it's alright. Walking down that long, lonesome road, babe, where I'm bound, I can't tell. But goodbye's too good a word, gal, so I'll just say fare thee well. Saying you treated me unkind, you could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time, but don't think twice, it's alright. Ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, like you never done before. Ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, I don't hear you anymore. I'm a-thinking and a-wondering all the way down the road. I once loved a woman, a child I'm told. I gave her my heart, but she wanted my soul. So don't think twice, it's all right.
A band called Honolly singing that song called Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, a Bob Dylan tune made popular by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And it's the music and legacy of PP&M that a band called Honolly are, I used the word earlier, channeling. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking today with Sarah Randall Hunt and Eli Zoller, who are two-thirds of a band called Honolly. They'll be in Charleston on Sunday. And, you know, Sarah, I think you made reference earlier to some of the groups whose music we do, implying that you don't only do music that Peter, Paul, and Mary did.
Well, I think the temperature of that time, or the sort of the thing that everyone would do, is a lot of people shared music. I mean, you know, a lot of the hits that Peter, Paul, and Mary wound up doing were songs written by, like you, we were discussing, John Denver, Bob Dylan, Gordon Lightfoot. So there was a lot of sharing going around. So I was very familiar growing up with Bob Dylan. Oh gosh, the Byrds, the Mamas and the Papas, Peter, Paul, and Mary, of course, and a lot of their earlier music in my childhood. And but that sort of cross-pollination was happening a lot. And I was familiar with a lot of the bands that they were friends with, so in addition to their own music.
I mean, the scene alone, when they were just getting started in the East Village of New York City, or in the West Village, rather, was just, it was so, you know, it was so vibrant and so lively in its own little way that, you know, it wasn't uncommon for a lot of these artists just to be playing the same clubs each night just to pass the hat. You know, they weren't getting salary on the night. You just pass the bucket around and hope you get enough tips in order to cover your meal. And in doing so, they would share tunes, they would work with tunes, and also some of the artists who weren't necessarily as far along as Peter, Paul, and Mary, who had the advantage of a little bit of extra PR and assistance when they were getting started, they would gift them their tune, thinking, "Hey, I can get out there. I can get some attention by giving these tunes to my friends who are going to make them popular for me, who are going to make them sound good." And even though it was often a competitive friendship that they had with a lot of these artists, it was always very supportive for music, and it was very respectful.
Mm-hmm. One of the elements that was always very important to Peter, Paul, and Mary was politics. Mm-hmm. Many of the songs that they did had some sort of a political undertone to them, and they were quite actively involved in the civil rights movement.
Well,
and
it
continued
it's certainly
to be fair
to say later. That they were aware. You know, there were a lot of things going on in the 60s, as we all know, and they weren't ones to stay quiet. But what I think we all really, you know, find fascinating about their music is that it was never, even when they decided to share an opinion of sorts, it was never one-sided. They were always open to the discussion. You know, there was, and rightfully so, there was a lot of frustration and anger in the American culture in the 60s, and a lot of it was expressed musically. But I think they were much more about being ones to contribute the ideas as opposed to insist on what was right and wrong, which is, I think that's one of the things that a lot of people are finding, you know, similar to today's times. A lot of people have something to say, and they only say it in one way, and Peter, Paul, and Mary wanted more than that, and you can hear it. You can hear it in their writing. It's incredible.
Is that element a part of your band as well?
I think we're all very people that, you know, who are up on the times and are actively involved in our communities, and I think have taken active interest in what's happening and, you know, wanting to take a... I take a lot of inspiration from what they were doing, too, in...
Sure.
In sort of using music as a conversation starter and to sort of lower the gap between people who may have political differences and to open it up and make it crack that open. So I take a huge amount of inspiration from that. In the show, we do have a point where we do address this and talk about it, but I think that the biggest point is that this is for everyone. It's not just for, regardless of your belief system, regardless of your background. This is, folk music has always been for the people and by the people and all of that. So that it's a very communal act of singing and participating in folk music. And I think that that's the biggest message that they were sending.
And for me personally, I know there's a lot of noise out there when it comes to politics, when it comes to social beliefs and everything, and it overwhelms me often, and because I'm a very opinionated person, it feels much better to contribute to that by performing this music with people of like-mindedness and inspired by the music that Peter, Paul, and Mary contributed to the conversation, albeit almost 50 years ago now, it's still just as relevant, and it feels so much more like a feels so much more like the sort of social awareness that people can relate to as opposed to just, frustration.
Mm-hmm. There were a few years ago that I actually talked with Peter Yarrow because Noel Paul Stuckey were singing together in our area, and I have to say it was a difficult conversation because I kept trying to get him back to the music and he kept wanting to talk about politics.
And, well, he's been at it for quite a while, you know, and regardless of what anybody may believe, I find how energetic he is about being a part of the conversation, inspiring.
Yeah, he was certainly passionate to the point of anger at times, it was kind of fascinating, but from an interviewer's point of view, where I wanted to talk about music, and that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to meet either of these guys?
We have not.
No.
Really?
No. Not yet.
To see them perform live, but we haven't met either of these gentlemen, and we're looking forward to when we can.
Do they know about you? Any idea?
Oh, gosh. I hope they like us.
I think it's so funny as you start to meet people in these audiences. It's, oh, my cousin and my friend and my dad. We met the son of their longtime bassist. Eli, I'm blanking right now. Had an amazing conversation with him. I know for a fact that, yes, thank you. Met his son, and we had a great conversation about all of that. So especially in the Northeast, the world sort of gets so small. So I'd be surprised. Huh. I think there's 6 degrees of separation happening there. We haven't made an attempt to reach out to meet him or them, but I would certainly welcome an opportunity at some point.
If they're listening right now, www.abandcalledconnelly.com. Anytime, we'll meet you wherever you want.
And we're on Twitter at Connelly NYC.
We're on Facebook. We're everywhere. You can't miss
And I'm sure that Peter and Paul know how to spell Honnelly, but for those who don't, it's H-O-N-A-L-E-E. I always wondered, actually, until I finally looked at the words for Puff the Magic Dragon, which I assume is a song you sing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You would have to, especially if you're going to.
I think people ask us all the time what we think Peter, Paul, and Mary's most popular song was, and it's tough because I think the one that people associate with them the most is, I think it's probably Leaving on a Jet Plane, but. Mm-hmm. I think their most popular song is probably Puff the Magic Dragon, because I might have heard 20 different versions of that in children's albums and sing-alongs, and its transcendency is just on another level because it speaks to everybody, whether it's just, you know, a kid who wants to hear a story about his, you know, best friend Magical Dragon, or it's the song you grew up with. It spans oceans. It's great. So how could a rock be not sing it?
Yeah. Well, my favorite thing, too, especially in regards to that song, is in speaking to the sort of timeless nature of this music, you look out in our audiences, and it's people 9 to 99. You know, I mean, there's a little kid who just found out about this, you know, Puff the Magic Dragon song, and they're singing along, and they know all the words, and it's really cool.
We had our youngest audience member 2 weeks ago. our bass player's newborn son came to the show. He's 4.5 months old. Apparently, he was a little tired because it was towards the end of the day, so he was falling asleep. And then when Puff the Magic Dragon started, he woke up and then went back to sleep.
That's sweet. That is
sweet. Shout out to Paul.
Well, I hope that folks can get a chance to hear you one of the two places. You'll be in Illinois this weekend on Saturday at 8 o'clock in Sandwich, Illinois, at the Sandwich Opera House. And then on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. And I should say again that that's actually the final performance in a three-day festival. It's called Celebration, a Festival of the Arts, an annual event in Charleston. It starts on Friday, continues through Sunday, and you can go to the Eastern Illinois University website or just Google Celebration Festival Charleston, and you will be able to access the complete schedule of there's music, there is lots of visual art, and many other things going on during that festival. And I'd encourage you to check out the full schedule. Sarah and Eli and Chris in absentia, thank you very much for joining us on Live and Local today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Here is another tune that belonged to Peter, Paul, and Mary. And once again, I don't know who wrote it. I dig rock and roll music.
Oh, this is all them.
All them.
They decided they were a little sick of being made fun of as folkies, and so they wanted to give a shout-out to a couple of their rock and roll friends.
It's a band called Honnelly here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Rock and roll music, and I love to get the chance to play and sing it
It's about the happiest sound going down today.
The message may not move me or mean a great deal to me, but hey, it feels so groovy to say.
I dig the mamas and the papas and the trip, Sunset Strip in L.A. They got a good thing going when the words don't get in the way, yeah. And when they're really wailing, Michelle and Cass are sailing. Hey, they really nail me to the wall. All the leaves are brown, and the sky is gray.
And the sky is gray.
Safe and warm.
I'd be sick and warm
if I was in L.A.
If I was in L.A.
California dreaming.
California dreaming
on such a winter's day. I dig Donovan kinda in a dreamlike, tripped-out way. His crystal images, they got me dreaming about a brighter day.
And when the Beatles tell ya they've got a word, love, to sell ya, they mean exactly what they say.
Asked a girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I wanna be a famous star on the screen, but you can do something in between.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you. Beep, 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 yeah.
A band called Honolly in a medley of tunes from Peter, Paul, and Mary. Once again, they will be in Sandwich, Illinois at Sandwich Opera House Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and then in Charleston at Eastern Illinois University Sunday at 3 o'clock at the end of Charleston's Celebration, a festival of the arts, which begins Friday, runs Friday through Sunday in Charleston. Our broadcast on Live and Local today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. We also have support from the Friends of WILL and from a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. This is 90.9 WILL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.